Hi, and welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. I'm Joseph Geierman from Doraville.org, and we're here to talk today about Georgia politics. We're at Manuel's Tavern, so it's a very good place for it. I'm going to start to my left with introductions, and Catherine, you can start us off.
Hi, I'm Catherine Smith from Blog for Democracy and Georgia for Democracy, and who knows what else. Glad to be here.
Jen Brock from Blog for Democracy.
Kimberly Henderson, Blog's Not Very Political, Le Debris et Blanche.
Griff Drift from Drifting Through the Grift.
Well, thank you everyone for making it. Kind of actually doing this a little bit sooner than usual. It hasn't been 5 months. So anyway, there's been this week a lot of talk about the District 80 race with... it's against Mike Jacobs, and there's a new guy on the Democratic side. He's the only one who actually qualified, and his name is Keith Gross. And suddenly this week, a lot of information came out, accusations that he doesn't actually live in the district. And I don't know. Catherine, can you tell us a little bit more about this story?
Well, apparently the question was whether he has lived in the district for a full year and in Georgia for 2 years. An official ethics complaint was filed against him by someone whose name I can't remember. I can't remember his name. But he
had donated to Mike Jacobs.
Oh, right.
He's a Republican. Big surprise.
Yeah. And Keith Gross has explained it. He's emailed several of the blogs in town and had an opportunity to explain that he has lived in the district, and this is just a distraction, but...
Here's the thing I don't understand is... Now, Mike Jacobs' district, the 80th, is competitive, but if you're an incumbent, the first rule of campaigning is you don't acknowledge an opponent unless you feel like you have some danger. So either they thought this thing would stick, or they think it's a lot closer than it should be.
Well, you know, the thing that I was kind of surprised by was how long it actually took for them to come up with a response. Because it was a couple of days, like, before you heard anything from Gross. And it just seemed to be snowballing. And, you know, every couple of hours on Peach Pundit, there's another kind of investigative report.
But the weird thing is if this thing doesn't stick and he actually qualifies, which at this point, I've been out of town for a week, so I'm not up to date on these things, but if he actually qualifies, it's a non-issue. I mean, it's not like you carry this into the campaign.
Well, that's what I think. I just wonder, you know, why they did it now. Like, you'd think they'd wait until October, and then it would be fresh in everyone's minds, because only those us inside baseball people are going to care
right
about it now. Like, nobody's paying any attention to the 80th.
I'll tell you, the first time I saw Keith Gross' picture, which was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, my first question was, is he old enough to qualify? It wasn't his residency. I mean,
well, the other thing about this that I find odd is that he does have professional, experienced people helping him with his campaign that he's paying. And you'd think that they would have had all this stuff covered ahead of time, you know, that there would have been, you know, very clear explanations of, you know, because I'm sure they would expect it if there was ever any question. So that kind of surprised me, because he's got, you know, the tool shed.
Yeah. The tool shed?
Yeah, I think the tool shed's working with him, which is like some of the people that used to be with the Democratic Party of Georgia. That's what we call them. Informally.
I think it's just sort of surprising that Keith Gross is the only person who qualified against Mike Jacobs. And I know that we were going to talk about DPG, but I mean, that's our number one pickup district, and the only guy who qualifies is somebody who may or may not live in... I mean, I understand there's some... I think that he probably has lived there based on this explanation, but I'm just sort of surprised that that was the only person that we ended up coming up with.
It was actually a really vulnerable seat.
Right, that we couldn't get anywhere else.
That we couldn't find someone
right.
who lived there for 5 years?
Right.
If anyone's going to run in the Democratic Party, this is the year to do it, when it's an election year and there's going to be a lot of energized Democrats.
We're not entering, like, big metaphor land now, are we? Vulnerable district, can't find anybody to run. I'm just saying.
The Senate race? No.
Did Mike Jacobs actually get any competition on the Republican side, or is he...
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Hmm.
No. There was some talk about that. But I don't think he did. I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Well, this kind of leads into the next topic that I wanted to discuss, which is, you know, everywhere else you look in the country, Republicans seem like they're in trouble, but here in Georgia they seem to be doing great. And, you know, you look at all the recent cases, you look at Dennis Hastert's district was lost fairly recently. There was another one in Louisiana, like, a month ago or so. And then just the other last week, I guess, Travis Childers of Mississippi won as a Democrat in a seat that there were, like, the Republican president, George Bush, Dick Cheney were out there. They were trying to link the guy to Barack Obama, saying he's a scary liberal going to Congress. And he was able to win in Mississippi, which, you know, I think
in a district that's been a Republican for 30 years.
60-some percent voted for Bush in the last election. So I'm just wondering, what's happening in Georgia?
Well, we're just pulling up the rear, you know. We're going to give us till 2012 or something. I don't know.
Mississippi's the exception.
I think it's probably the abortion issue. Maybe we have more evangelicals with money in Georgia that have more ties to politicians.
And it should be pointed out that Childers did run on a pro-life platform, so there's that.
I mean, we have Democrats who are conservative Democrats in Georgia. I mean, not as many as there used to be, but, I mean, you'd think that the party would find some who could run in some of these more conservative places.
Well, I think the last time Georgia was on the forefront of anything, REM's debut album. Maybe. I mean, we are always just a little bit behind the curve, especially in electoral politics. So.
Well, you know, it is. I think it is interesting that Georgia has so many people running right now for president, kind of in third parties. Though, I mean, it seems like a lot of people. Cynthia McKinney wants to be the Green Party presidential candidate. Bob Barr wants to be the Libertarian. Sam Nunn, for a little while, it looked like he wanted to do some kind of third party thing with Bloomberg from New York.
That was Unity 08.
And now it sounds like he maybe is vying for the VP seat or some post in the cabinet. And then there was always Newt Gingrich, who considered running for about a week. So
Newt Gingrich is much more happy just sort of sitting on the sidelines throwing bombs. I mean, that was his thing back in the late 80s, was he was a very good back row bomb thrower, but the minute he became speaker, of course, he screwed it up, got an ethical scandal, was booted out. So he sort of knows his role at this point.
Well, I think that some of the Republicans were disappointed with him when he did that climate change. Wasn't it a climate thing with Nancy Pelosi? I mean, I remember hearing some comments about that, like, you know, what's he doing?
Slowly but surely, the Republicans are coming over to the fact that the global climate actually is changing. I actually, in my travels this past week, heard, in case you haven't heard, the polar bears have been placed on the Endangered Species Act.
By George Bush.
Although with some very strong caveats.
Yeah, we had a little signing.
Can't affect any oil.
Exactly. Catherine's right. It's basically the head of the Department of the Interior, his name escapes me, basically did a signing statement on the addition to it. But John McCain actually came out and said this is a good thing, you know, that the polar bears need to be taken care of. So there's slowly but surely some movement there.
So are we going to see... I just can't help but think that this would be the year that there would be a lot of people voting Democrat in Georgia, just people who've never voted before. If Barack Obama, who looks like he's going to be presidential candidate for the Democrats, gets the nomination, it definitely looks like that. So I just can't believe that the Democratic Party didn't get more people out there in those seats, because you never know what's going to happen. There was a guy you were talking about earlier. What was his name? Who decided not to run? For
Richard Royal.
Oh yeah, the Republican from Camilla, which I was talking about earlier, Richard Royal, who's been my representative down in Moultrie for close to 20 years, I guess, and he was originally a Democrat and switched to Republican when they took control. You figure that out. But Camilla has been like a center of economic power in the legislature for like the past 40 years in the state, and he decided not to run all of a sudden. And he pulled a little political trick on and ended up allowing the Republican replacement to run unopposed. But yeah, there's definitely a sort of generational change happening in the state, and it's curious that the Democrats aren't taking advantage of it. And you know, Catherine, I'm might throw it over to you here in a second, but I mean, we're only 6 years out from Democrats being in control, and you have to start questioning, is it just transitional period, or is there something bigger here?
Well, I think it's transitional. I just, you know, start to wonder how long is the transition going to take, and what damage is going to happen to the party in the process. I'm a Democrat. I've been a Democrat all my life, and I try to work with the party, and I work with the young Democrats, who I think are probably the most dynamic Democratic group in the state. But I think they're kind of lost, you know, that, like you said, it's been 6 years, but I think they still operate like they're going to be right back in power, and so they don't have to run as many people or something. They talk a lot about quality over quantity, that we have quality, the races that we are running in are in quality districts, but I don't buy that. You know, there should have been someone qualified to run against Richard Royal for the very fact that he might have decided at the last minute not to run, or that there's always the chance that something's going to change.
Something crazy will happen. You should always be
prepared for it. Mm-hmm. You know, we always talk about that. Like, you line things up so that you're ready when there's an opportunity, but we're not doing that.
But see, even the quality argument doesn't really hold water with me, because I was talking to somebody this past weekend about 2010, and I was like, who are you going to run for governor? DuBose Porter?
I think so.
That's the only answer. What else is there? So, and I'm not trying to knock DuBose Porter here. I think he's a great guy. I think he'll be a decent candidate. He's going to get completely washed by Casey Cagle. But the point is if you're talking about quality, then you're talking about the big races. And then you're talking about Senate. You're talking about governor. You're talking about lieutenant governor. Who's your candidates?
Well, and this has always been my one of the things that I've talked about forever about the Democratic Party of Georgia is that, or as long as I've lived here, is that you have to focus on the smaller races, because 10 years from now, those are the people that are going to be running for Senate or running for Congress or running for Lieutenant Governor and Governor and Secretary of State and all those offices. But we don't do that. We let the party elders keep their power, and then we don't let any of it trickle down.
But then if they don't even run good candidates at the top positions, what's left?
Well, I think that's the question is, what defines a good candidate? I'm sure if you talk to DuBose Porter, he would say, I'm the good candidate, so why do we need anyone else? I'm not going to say anything bad about DuBose Porter. I sat here and had a burger with him a couple months ago.
I've emailed with him. He's a great guy. I'm not saying anything bad about him.
But you're right. He might not be the best candidate, and he might not be able to beat Casey Cagle.
Well, even if
and what are we doing to line him up anyway? What are we doing to line him up? Because if he runs, then his seat's going to be empty, and who's ready to run for that?
So then you lose power in the House.
All
right. So are you saying that Vernon Jones was essentially right when he said the Democratic Party of Georgia is just
a bunch of losers?
Party of losers, I think, is the actual quote.
Well, he can leave at any time.
I thought
according to Neil Cardwell, he already did.
Right. Well, right. And I don't think he was ever really a part of it anyway. But.
Well, we'll see how well he does too. And
well, I just have to say that this is where I this cues me to what I always say is that, you know, those of us who consider ourselves Democrats, and I know that's not everybody at this table.
That'd be not us.
I lean that way.
it's our party, too. You know, it's not just, you know, a lot of people like to say, oh, the Democratic Party of Georgia does this. So, you know, Democrats that I know, they do this and they do that. Well, you know, it's our party.
And
we all try. It's very frustrating. Very frustrating.
Well, you got a hard choice. And it's a choice that's so hard, I think, that sometimes leadership doesn't want to make it. Do you want to be Moses and wander around 40 years in the wilderness before you find Israel, or do you just want to sit around and wait till lightning strikes?
Well, that's sort of what the National Party Democrats did to help them take back the House.
what, lightning strikes?
Well, wandering out of the deserts, and then the opportunity appeared, and then that was it. I mean, the Democratic Party, on the national level didn't do anything to win that in 2006 except for waiting for Republicans.
Well, yeah, they got a lightning bolt named George W. Bush.
But, you know, well, I don't get any
Howard Dean. Howard Dean.
Maybe Glenn Richardson will be our George Bush.
Could be. Could be.
I think the 50-state strategy, it was very young at the time, but I do think it had an effect. Mm-hmm. And I think that while I don't always agree with everything Howard Dean says or does, I think that he's doing what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You have to be prepared. You have to be ready. You know, so when that opportunity arrives, you're ready, and you've got a candidate to run that's going to be able to beat whomever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the Georgia Democratic Party is struggling.
You're right. Our bench is... No bench.
Well, it's you know what, it's even beyond that for a second. It's and I have been one of the people in past podcasts that has harped on the weak bench of the Democratic Party. But you're right, the Richard Royal thing is a good example. Forget the bench, just run people.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I mean, you never know what sort of lightning in a bottle you might get. There might have been some guy down in Funston, Georgia, that could have just qualified, and suddenly he's running against the mayor of Camilla, and you've got a star that you never knew you had.
Well, and
you got to get people out and run.
Right, and the other thing is, I grew up in Michigan, and my mother's very active in the Democratic Party when I was young, and I was later, and she used to tell me about how they just go up to somebody who's in some district where they knew they couldn't win, and they just say, we want you to run. We are, you know, pretty confident that you're not going to win, but make them spend some money. Find out how many Democrats there are. You know, right now, there's all these districts that we haven't run anybody in a long time. We don't even know how many Democrats there are there. You know, help them with the qualifying fee. Just get their name on the ballot. You'd be surprised. They might get some votes, and they might even win.
Yeah. And it doesn't even necessarily be state house races. The problem is we're not running anyone in district. I mean, and I don't believe that district attorney races should be partisan, but even so... County commissioners, board of education,
school and like boards. City council stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, kind of backtrack a little bit back to the legislature itself and some of the stuff that they did. One of the big issues, like for the past few years, has been Sunday alcohol sales and kind of the people in. It seems like there's actually a big push for it both in the House and the Senate. I think the only reason it hasn't passed is because Sonny Perdue has been so adamantly opposed and said that he would veto it, so I think they didn't even bother to try to pass anything this year. And Casey Cagle originally was one of the people who had said he was in favor of having the vote on it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But he actually recently came out with a little statement that kind of equivocated on exactly what he believed and why, and I just want to throw it out to the group and kind of get your take on things.
Well, I know that Sonny Perdue had previously said that he didn't think it should be opened up to a vote because, what was it he said, that if people voted on this, then what would stop them from voting on legalizing prostitution and things like that? He said, we're a republic. That's what they elect us for, is for us to make decisions. And then now Casey Cagle has come out, and maybe he's trying to, you know, win some votes or some, you know, popularity, but saying, well, maybe we should let the people vote on it. And it's just ridiculous to me how we have this double standard right now in Georgia where people can go to bars and drink on Sundays, but, oh, if you want to stay home and, you know, buy a six-pack and watch sports, you know, in the comfort of your own home, that's not cool, but it's okay to get, you know, wasted and drive home from the bar.
Well,
Does it make sense?
I think they did pass. Like, he did sign the thing so that Gwinnett County Arena can sell beer on Sunday. So, obviously, the governor doesn't feel that strongly about, you know, people drinking on Sunday. He's helping this. I guess if you're a business that, you know,
it's
got some money to...
It's the old political maxim of, of course we want the people to vote on it as long as they're going to vote our way.
Well, I think it's also, you know, of course we're going to let the Gwinnett Arena sell beer. It's good for business.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I think in Georgia, it almost
that's
always... You would think supermarkets would have a bigger lobby, you know, than the Gwinnett Arena, though. I mean, they really want the Sunday beer and wine sales.
But the bars and restaurants don't. and they probably have.
Yeah, it's the two lobbies against each other. It's it's the convenience store supermarkets versus the beer lobby, whatever it's actually called.
Well, I have read that some liquor store owners actually are against this because they would have to be open another day.
Yeah, that I've heard that too, actually, because, you know, some of the hardest working people in Georgia is liquor store owners. They're open 6 days a week from noon until midnight. They're always there.
Something interesting about Purdue on this issue, though, is that he recently, you know, sent a letter out to constituents about it, and he didn't even take a position. He said, thank you for writing me about, you know, alcohol sales on Sunday. This didn't actually come up for a vote. It was never sent to me, so I didn't have the opportunity to do something with it, and as the governor, I don't have the ability to force anybody to do anything. Like, he never said, I'm going to veto it. He never said, well, I'll sign it. He just never said anything. I hope this helps.
How is he prompted to send that letter?
Well, if you write him a letter and complain about something, he'll write you a letter back.
Yeah, because the governor has no influence over the legislature. Right. He just sort of sits in his office waiting for it to come to him.
Well, that letter sounds like he's basically assuming that whoever he's sending it to hasn't followed the legislative session, which may be the case most of the time. But
it'll happen.
Well, I think that's just a blatant way of saying the legislature hasn't been doing anything, mm-hmm. you know, so you take this up, don't take it up with me, take it up with your representatives and your senators.
Yeah, which he should be legacy building at this point, and he's not doing too much other than he flew to Shanghai.
Well,
he flew to Shanghai, I know that. I mean, he castrated some cows recently. You know, he's a vet, I mean, that's what they do.
Some funny outfits over the course of his...
I love it, man. Let him keep dressing up in funny outfits. That's awesome.
What funny... I miss the funny outfits.
He's always dressing up in funny outfits. His staff has like a conniption because people like send him stuff and he just puts it on. And of course, there's always photographers because he's the governor. So there's always pictures of him like in a football helmet. I mean, he's like the kid in the football helmet that runs into the wall.
Here's another good point about Sonny Perdue. Okay, Sonny Perdue graduated from the University of Georgia. And when Tony and I were at the Georgia Tech game last year, you know, it was at Georgia Tech. He's on the screen and he's like, I'm Sonny Perdue, I'm the governor of Georgia, blah, blah, blah. Gives some sort of public service announcement about not drinking and driving, I think, after the game. And at the end, he says, go Jackets.
No, he did not.
That is some clear pandering. Yes, he did.
Did he really?
He really did.
Wow.
That's how low he is.
He's trying to appeal to a broad base.
That's right.
He knows he's got the UGA base.
That's amazing that he said that.
Yeah,
I was quite amazed when it came out of his mouth.
He didn't have to say it either. That's the funny thing.
He had a grandpa moment.
Well, that's like that letter. He didn't have to write that letter. He didn't have to write it that way. He could have said, you know.
He didn't have to write. Nobody would have expected a response.
Well, some of those guys just always write a letter, you know.
Well, I guess that's all I really have. So I wanted to see open it up. Is there any other burning issues that we haven't covered?
Well, can I just bring up just one quick thing about the Sunday sales as well? Is that I think was it Pennsylvania was one of the last states to actually allow Sunday sales, and it was actually proven that it brought in additional tax revenue. As opposed to, you know, just flat sales. You know, it's not like people are, you know, stocking up on a Saturday night. People were actually, there was new sales being made on Sundays.
Impulse buys.
And I actually had written Sonny Perdue a letter. It's been a couple of years ago, I think, when he had talked about Peach Care falling short in funding. And I said, well, here's one way you could get some money. Might be an idea. And I don't know if the legislature brought this up, but there's also the deal with Georgia being the only state that does not require people to wear seatbelts in pickup trucks.
Hey now.
Has that come up?
I thought they were.
There's a damn good reason for that.
Well, there's a lot of federal highway money being withheld from the state as well because of that law.
You shouldn't make anyone wear a seatbelt.
Yeah.
What?
It's a reason to pull people over.
Okay, I'm Jen has actually stunned me silent.
Wow.
Sorry.
You sound like a libertarian there.
I was going to try to take in this tangent into, you know, legalizing pot, but
I'm all about that. Let's talk about that.
No, you go with the no seatbelt thing.
I was just wondering, I'm being neutral on the issue. I'm just wondering if it was even brought up.
No. Go ahead, Jen.
What? Oh, about pulling people over?
Seatbelts.
Oh, absolutely. Let me tell you what. If you are black or in a shitty car, you're Mexican or whatever, you will get pulled over, and the initial reason will be no seatbelt, and then they'll search your car. I cannot even tell you how many clients I have, and it's like, no seatbelt, possession of marijuana, no seatbelt, possession of whatever it is that they use the no seatbelt law to get inside your vehicle, not because, you know, I mean, people like to talk about public safety reasons, but I think the whole, you know, smashing through your windshield is, you know, Darwin's law. So
Legal, no seat belts, legalized pot.
That's it. Sounds good.
We have consensus in the political podcast.
In Michigan, they are not.
That's right. And then that gets out both of them.
In Michigan, you can't, if you're pulled over, they can't pull you over just because you're not wearing a seatbelt. But if they pull you over for another reason, they can ticket you for not wearing a seatbelt. But they can't just pull you over.
And they can search your whole car for your own safety.
Well, but they have to pull you over for another reason. Like if you're speeding, and you're
if
also
you're
not wearing
inside your lane,
and you're also not wearing your seatbelt, then they can give you a ticket for that seatbelt. But they can't see you driving down the street, abiding by all laws, but not wearing a seatbelt and pull you over and give you a ticket. So that's like a balance between.
Joseph is desperately trying to figure out how he's going to wrap this all back into the.
The only reason I brought it up is because I was talking about money. I was talking about Georgia getting some tax revenue, and because of the, you know, the federal government withholding our highway funds because of that seatbelt law.
There's a good reason for no seatbelts in trucks.
I thought they did. They did bring it up this session.
They bring it up every session, but it always fails because those damn South Georgia legislators. Start talking about the farmers driving between their fields and they can't get in and out of the truck and put the seatbelt on.
Oh.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up now. there really isn't a good stop. So, anyway, I want to thank everyone for making it here, and thank Georgia Podcast Network for actually hosting the show.
And their new website, their fantastic new website.
And to mention their great new website, if you're getting this in your RSS feed, go to GeorgiaPodcastNetwork.com, GAPodcastNetwork.com, and check out the new design. It's got a lot more usability features that are really nice, and it looks great too. So check it out. And we'll go around the table for final thoughts, and I'll start with you again, Catherine.
Okay. Well, it was great to be here. Nice conversation as usual. And go Georgia Podcast Network. Nice new site. Check it out.
I actually wear my seatbelt every time because I actually did flat a windshield one time, but I'm not, you know, a big favor of mandating people do that. I just have now learned I always wear it.
And I'm a little paranoid. Sometimes I'm wearing it when I'm sitting still in a parked car. But thanks for having me, and thanks, guys, for inviting me out. It was a lot of fun.
Just got back from New Orleans, and I just want to say that New Orleans is still a great town, and you should visit soon.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. Listen to us next time. This is Joseph for Georgia Politics Podcast.
Now we're all going to go smoke pot with no seatbelts on.